Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times. Now with goals.
Hello and welcome to The Game, the football podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti. Now, before we begin, do not forget, you can catch the highlights from every Premier League game before anyone else simply by downloading the Times app to your smartphone. Brief disclaimer, you're not actually catching them before anyone else. If you're actually physically in the ground, presumably you will see the goals first. But you only see the goals from that game, not the other ones. And that is what is so brilliant about the Times app. Now remember, you can also, and I am really excited about this, catch the show live in Liverpool on the 6th of March. That is this Thursday. Imagine that. Myself, Tony Barrett, Tony Evans and Peter Reid up on stage. Tickets cost £5 for Times Plus members and £7.50 for non-members. To book, visit www.ctickets.com/thetimes or call 0871-620-4025. This week, I'm particularly excited because we have Tony Barrett again, who I will be seeing on Thursday. We're joined by James Scowcroft. And of course, it's Rory K. Smith. Big Wembley Cup final, City and Sunderland. Now, I have to start and start with you, Rory, because I think we're kindred spirits in admiring the work of one George Culkin. He wrote a wonderful blog on Friday, it was. What will remain is the fact that they went to a Wembley final. And that, in terms of stuff that gets talked about, stuff that gets passed down, that is far more relevant than people saying, oh, look, remember, we were in the Premier League for three straight years and we finished 16th, 14th, and 12th. Is that an excessively romantic George Culkin view?
No. I mean, first of all, I will concur with your man crush on George Culkin.
Yeah, well, it's not quite that. He's a poet.
Yeah, he is a poet, and his blog was wonderful, and his stuff from the game itself was wonderful. And I agree completely with you. I think that it was one of the boys at Wigan, whether it was one of the players, said that it might even have been Ben Watson, said you can get over a relegation. If you get relegated, you can come back up. You get another shot. So yeah, it was a blow to Wigan, say when they went down. It would be a blow to Sunderland if they go down. But you can recover from it. What the moments of cup finals, those incidents, those sort of memories, they're the mythology of a club. And that's what fans need and that's what fans want. So I know that it sounds desperately romantic and it's not very fashionable and it's probably not realistic. But I think football has this danger, this habit of talking itself into a mindset of saying, well, the cups don't matter. They do matter. If you get to the cup final, even if you lose, the Sunderland fans will remember that night in Covent Garden when there were 20,000 of them in the street, which meant it was slightly quieter than normal. They will remember the 55 minutes at Wembley when they were winning, that idea of almost, you know, almost being there, of the dream being alive. That's what being a supporter is all about. What the hell is the point of finishing 12th? If you get relegated, you get relegated. Deal with it. Rebuild, come again. You'll come back up eventually.
James, you support a big club. It's fair to say that if you're a United supporter, you have a different parameter on this. But you played for a club that, or several clubs that were perhaps in many ways comparable to Sunderland. As a player, did you experience that? Where you, I mean, did relegation hurt more? I mean, is that something you can get over more than?
Well, relegation hurts. Relegation is one of the worst things that can happen, I think, as a player, because it's your livelihood. I think it's different being a fan to being a player.
Or you had that automatic wage cut in your contract.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, so it does hurt. I think the one big thing, and vast majority of football clubs, all the clubs I've played for, a lot of clubs are going to, when you walk into a reception of a football club, and it's probably the nicest part of the ground, vast majority of football clubs will have a big board and it will say honours. Wigan Athletic will have one and it will say FA Cup winners 2013. That will be there for the next 100, 200 years. Relegation, promotions, don't even come up to it. But to compare Manchester United, where Manchester United are at the moment, if you say, do you want to win a League Cup or do you want to finish fourth and qualify in the Champions League? It's almost a similar kind of argument that Arsenal had last year of, well, forget
you'd
the cups.
You'd rather a league, as United fan, I'm going to ask you this question flat out because you set me up here.
No, yeah, exactly.
Would you rather United had beaten Sunderland and won the League Cup this year and finished sixth?
No.
You'd rather finish top four?
Yeah.
Tony, it's not really a secret that you're slightly associated with another more successful club, but does it become a concern? I mean, people have joked about sort of the, you know, Arsene Wenger and his fourth place trophies and whatnot. Or do we in the media make too much of a big deal out of it? Should we just accept that there are six or seven clubs in this country who are playing one sport and 85 are playing a different one?
No, I think we should attack the idea with every opportunity because it's just absolute nonsense. You can go back 30 years to the great Liverpool side, which won the League Cup 4 years in a row. They took the competition seriously. They put their strongest side up that they possibly could, even though they were playing European Cup games twice a month, even though they were winning the European Cup, winning league championships at that time, they still took that competition seriously. It is something that has only been over the last 10, 15 years. It is a product of the Champions League. It's a bad product of the Champions League that the clubs now see top four as being the be-all and end-all. And that's why the attitude of the supporters has changed so much. And one of the things that I enjoyed most about yesterday was the reaction of the City players. If you looked at them on Twitter, they're tweeting pictures of them with the trophy. They're saying what a great occasion it was. And they gave the competition the respect that they deserved. And this is Manchester City with everything they've got on. They could have easily done what Arsenal do with this competition, but they haven't. They treat it seriously. And I can't remember which of the players it was, but he said, people say it's an easy trophy to win. Go and try and win it.
We need to start accepting that these are great. The League Cup is a good competition. The FA Cup is a brilliant competition. If we take it seriously in the media, in the stands, if we think this matters, then eventually that the reverse will happen. That will trickle up to the clubs and they'll think, do you know what, people care about this.
I actually think the League Cup isn't a million miles away from the FA Cup.
I'd go further, James. I think the last couple of years it's been more entertaining.
I think Barrett's
to watch.
Right. Do you know why that is, though? It's just the clubs, the big clubs know they can get it out of the way by February.
But we can't really have a debate because I have to be consistent with what I've said all along. We need to move on and actually talk about the actual teams. Roy, why were Sunderland on top for so long? Was it just the early goal? Why did it feel like they were on top for so long?
They were set up well. They had that passion, that kind of belief that they could do something, a lot of energy. But the problem is against a team like City, I guess, that after a while, after an hour or so, the legs go a little bit. You run out of that initial kind of adrenaline and City's extra quality shone through.
Ooh, James, why can Yaya Toure strike a ball so well?
I wish I knew that. I'd still be playing football if I knew that. That's one of the goals of the seasons for me.
You took some shots from distance as well, right? You're almost as big as Yaya Toure, now anyway. No, but I'm saying is like you're a big, strong guy, right? Presumably you practice this over and over again. What's the difference between a top player like Yaya Toure doing this consistently, which he does, and somebody else? Is it the mechanics of striking the ball?
It's mental strength. So if you look at that moment yesterday, you know, Man City are struggling, they're chasing the game, they need something to that technique. A lot of people go on about Nasri's goal, and it is a great goal. That technique where it comes to you and you can whip the ball with pace and get it up and over the goalkeeper as it's coming across your body, that is one of the hardest skills in football. Tony might remember this. I've only ever seen it done once, and Steven Gerrard scored a goal in Marseille away. I don't know if you can remember, Tony, in the Champions League.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And it was, I think Yaya Toure is his goal of the season, especially at the moment, that, you know, in such a big game to produce something like that. That is one of the hardest skills in football.
Is that the flip side of that? Is there's a Sunderland player who had a great opportunity to equalise late in the game when it was still 2-1. Somebody who's once described as the best British finisher.
I stand by that.
Okay, so it looked to me and to everybody that he didn't feel comfortable hitting the ball with his right foot, and so he did this little, like, sort of uncoordinated shimmy. From there, if you're a natural-born finisher, you finish with whatever foot it comes to, because it's not...
Yeah, but it's confidence, isn't it, as well? I agree with you. He should have hit it with his right, but it's confidence. But I want to ask Barrett a question. What happens to Fabio Barini next season?
Fabio Barini?
Yeah.
He gets sold.
Do you not think he's done enough to show that he's worth another shot?
There's a lot of competition at Liverpool.
There might be less.
I think they haven't given up on him. He's not an Iago Aspas by any means. He is the player who would be third choice and would remain third choice behind Luis Suarez, Daniel Sturridge. But he would be an option who can play from the wide areas and in the cup competitions that Liverpool would treat less seriously next season when they are in Europe. He will get games, but I just think there is a feeling at the club that he's done particularly well at Sunderland, well enough to salvage his reputation and maintain his value. And I think Liverpool think that this will be the time when you maximise that return and cut your losses.
When you say Liverpool, do you mean Brendan Rodgers? Because obviously Rodgers had him as a kid at Chelsea. He had him again at Swansea, and he had him again at Liverpool. So I'm assuming, you know... I'll ask you a question.
Sorry to butt in. That goal he scored yesterday is a fantastic goal. That goal only comes from playing week in, week out. You know, that confidence, that strength he had to brush company aside. You know, especially if you're a centre forward, if you're in and out of a team, if he goes back to Liverpool, he'll be in and out of the team. He will lose his fitness, he'll lose his confidence. You know, you lose your momentum that you got.
But there are some players who, I can think of two Manchester United guys actually who kind of made a whole career out of being sort of super subs, playing the odd game. You know, in Chicharito and Solskjaer, right? So
yeah, but that's
because you were saying Barini cannot be that kind of player.
But there's a host of players that, you know, lose their way because they don't play every week.
But that's what we're saying. So Brendan might believe that he's not that kind of guy. He doesn't have the right skill set to be a squad player. He either starts and maybe he's not good enough to start for Liverpool, or
I think it's complex. I think the United comparison is a bit unfair just because Solskjaer would have been getting those kind of chances in a team that was dominating games, so he basically just had to be the man in the box. If you were at Liverpool over the last two or three years, you didn't get to be that player. And Fabio Barini's biggest problem, the thing that impressed me most about his goal, yes, he wasn't the finish as wonderful as it was the fact that he withstood the challenge from Vincent Kompany, as bad as Kompany's defending was. When Barini first came to Liverpool, he would have went down in that situation. He wouldn't have kept on going. He wouldn't have went through on goal. And that's the point that James makes about playing games regularly. I don't think it's in anyone's best interest for Barini now to go back to a club where he is going to be a bit part player, having flourished as a regular first teamer. I don't think it will be within Liverpool's or Barini's best interest. I think Liverpool accept that. And I think that, and don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that's the way the manager sees it too.
Arsenal dropped points at Stoke, not for the first time. I thought Rory actually made a very nice point about in his little column in the game, whereby Liverpool are sort of back in the title race and they're 4 points back, and Arsenal are screwed and they're 4 points back. But obviously, I presume it's down to momentum. Wenger came out with a Koscielny handball. He said that nobody knows what the rules are, and it was a gift to Stoke and so on. Maybe it's just me, but his arm is away from his body. He increases his volume. That's a handball. There's no debate about this. You're nodding. Does it mean you agree with me, Rory?
I always agree with you, Dan.
Thank you. Anybody disagree? No? Okay,
no.
Good. I'm right.
I think it is a harsh penalty, and I agree with Wenger that there is a lot of confusion about what the rules are. And
maybe there's a confusion because people like him keep saying there's confusion.
Possibly.
There is no confusion.
What should he have done?
What
should he have done?
Keep his arm away from his body.
Yeah, but he's gone to lunge for the ball. It's very, very hard to lunge for a ball and have your hands at the side because you lose balance. You know, his arms are up to keep his balance.
You know what?
It is abnormally high, though.
It's really high. I know what you mean, James, but I think it is very high.
It's not just goes out at an angle. It actually goes up.
It really annoys me when games get broken down into kind of refereeing controversies, when there's like a 2-1 win or a 1-0 win or whatever, and everyone says, the referee decided it. Arsenal would have won that game had they created any chances.
Yeah, Arsenal were really poor, I thought, beyond the decision. To be fair to Arsenal, what's up with Charlie Adam? Because I always thought of him before as like a very skillful, if somewhat slow, we're not very skillful, skillful by British standards, if slow sort of midfielder. We've had like... In the last 6 months or year, I feel like we've had like a dozen psychopath moments from him. And I thought the stamp on Giroud, and possibly the other one earlier, I think it was on Arteta as well. What's up with this guy? Is he not as nice as he seems? Is he? Does he think Pulis is still there? Well, what's the deal?
I wasn't sure.
Does he like this at Liverpool? No, right?
The stamp on Giroud looks bad. It does look bad. There's no question. I just think it's one of those. He is the only man in the entire world who knows whether he actually meant that. If people do clumsy things on football pitches all the time. Charlie Adam will have clumsily miscontrolled the ball on Saturday. He will have clumsily landed awkwardly at times. He will have. For me, I thought it looked bad, but I don't know. And there's a lengthy list now. But I do think it goes back further. If you ask Tottenham and specifically ask Gareth Bale, there is a list of Charlie Adam incidents where he's done naughty things. It doesn't surprise me, and in many ways, listen, it doesn't disappoint me. I like to see players who are competitive. I don't like to see them kick opponents all over the park, but things happen on a football pitch. You're playing centre midfield, you will have more than your fair share. I just think that's the way it is.
James, you've been there. I need to ask you, a professional footballer who's got coordination and agility above the average person, have you ever done that? Has it ever happened to you that you know, in some tackle or something, you just go and you happen to land right on the guy's ankle?
All the time, yeah. That happens
all the time.
What I would say is, if he has intentionally done it, you know, in this day and age, you cannot get away with anything. Although he has got away with it, you're going to get banned. It's as simple as that.
You're suggesting it can happen? Because you said it happens all the time. Because I don't see it happening all the time. I see most footballers. Did you ever go and accidentally injure somebody?
I've seen the incident. I think you have to look at where his eyes are. If his eyes are looking down, then you have to question him. If his eyes are looking at the ball or somewhere else, then I think that's the key moment.
I don't think... The problem with Steve Wilson called it right on Match of the Day, I think. He said that, as Barrett just said, we can't know whether he meant it on purpose. No one apart from Charlie Adam knows that. You have to balance out the fact that, as James says, his eyes weren't... He didn't glance down and look at Giroud and stamp on him. He seemed to be turning round. I believe that Charlie Adam's probably more prone to clumsiness than most other people.
Well, where did he think Giroud went?
If you look at him, he's not the quickest player, so he hasn't got the most nimblest of feet. He's a very talented footballer. But if you look at him over a course of 5-10 yards, I wouldn't say he's the quickest. So his feet aren't like a Messi, like where he can spring off one foot.
But then you do have to bring in his previous. That's the problem. It might be that...
It's previous in the same game, I might add.
It might be that in this instance, it wasn't on purpose and it was a mistake. But if you look at his sort of rap sheet, there's a good chance that it's not.
Well, just to wrap this up, Mark Hughes... We all sat in here at the start of the season. We were all uber negative. We're all like, "Ha! He signed Eric Peters. He's been injured. And Peters isn't that good anyway." I don't know if that was you, but
I don't think it was. No,
it might have been Husey. But Eric Peters has done. I think, you know, he's been a regular. And he's been good this season. And Stoke have been good. And I don't think they're going to go down. And they were very physical, I thought, but not to absurd like put them in prison levels. Tony, are you impressed at all with Mark Hughes? He doesn't seem to get much love from the national media.
I'm not so much impressed with Mark Hughes. I just think that Stoke are Stoke, and I've never had a problem with the way Stoke play football.
But they don't play that way anymore.
They do. And anyone who watched them against Arsenal on Saturday, if you try to tell me that's different than the way they played against Arsenal in the past, the only difference is that Rory Delap is no longer around to launch XSX into the box with every throw. But Stoke has still played the Stoke way, and anyone who watches them sees that is the way they do things. I think if Hughes has made one good decision, it's to not change things too fundamentally. I know he talked about doing that early on, and they do play possession football here and there, but it's still they debate to type as and when they need to.
They also have fullbacks who actually aren't recycled central defenders, and actually...
I think he did try and change it, Tony, at the start, didn't he? And then realised quickly, he thought, you know, I'm going to catch a cold here if I do.
All right, enough of this. Let's get stuck into our debates. We're going to start with Sol Campbell, who has a book coming out, which bizarrely isn't an autobiography. It's an authorized biography by a guy with an unusual name, Fred Astaire.
Simon Astaire.
Astaire.
Yeah.
Do you know this guy?
No.
Anybody ever heard of it? Do you think it's a real person, or do you think it's Sol using
a novelist?
Sorry?
He's a novelist.
He's a novelist.
Oh, really? It's not Sol using a pseudonym?
No, it is. He's a genuine novelist.
This is why we have Barrett on, does he brings culture.
He's Fred's brother.
There you go. It's very old brother. So the Sunday Times published an extract. There's a video on there as well. If you're a Times subscriber, you can see Sol actually putting these things in his own words.
Hashtag multimedia.
Exactly. We've done so many cross promotions. Are we doing great this show? But anyway, he did talk about. You talk about a bunch of things. One sort of the big headline that was splashed all over the Sunday Times was he believed that the fact that he's black is the reason that he wasn't England captain for a decade. I believe he only got to captain England three times. I'm stand corrected by Rory. Now, sort of the visceral reaction on Twitter was, oh, look, Sol's going crazy again, like the time he left the game at halftime and Kelly Hoppin and all that nuttiness that he's been involved in. The reason he wasn't England captain is that there was a generation of Tony Adams, and of course Paul Ince, who's also black, had captained England before him, and Rio Ferdinand, who's mixed race, had captained England after him, and blah blah blah. It's obviously very difficult for a bunch of white dudes to examine the merit of this. But I think there's a fair point, which our boss Tony Evans makes. You kind of wonder, why did he not speak up about this before? Should he have spoken up? And I think the scary bit was it if he didn't speak up because he thought it would hurt his career. Roy?
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I think that it's very dangerous to start criticizing him for not saying something during his career, because then if he's worried about institutional almost subliminal racism within the FA, if you then become the black man who is creating trouble, then that's not going to help their perception of you. I don't think anyone at the FA will ever have sat down with any of the managers and said, you can't have a black captain. I don't think any of the managers, when choosing their captain, will have thought, well, I can't have him because he's black. I think what the issue may well be is a more sort of insidious, more structural kind of racism, whereby skin colour feeds into people's subconscious thought processes, and we associate colour with certain traits and certain characteristics. Not in a sort of overt level, not in a way that you'd think you'd know you were doing it, but yeah, you wonder whether, say, not that Sven Göran Eriksson looked at Campbell and thought, well, he can't be captain because he's black, but when he was examining the pros and cons of people who could be captain, that there was something in his mind that he wasn't aware of that made him more likely to choose a white man than a black man.
I mean, in my reading of it, Tony, I thought he had a point. He was incensed when, he mentions it specifically, when Michael Owen was made England captain. I mean, I get the impression reading his stuff that he didn't have a problem sort of not being England captain when Tony Adams was there or people like that. And I can see his point with Owen. I don't know if it's a race thing as much as it's a marketability thing, in terms of at the time people thought, oh, look, Owen, everybody's going to love Michael Owen. Who wouldn't love Michael Owen? Let's all jump, let's make him England captain as well.
Anybody who'd ever met him.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Gab. I think marketing comes into it, but I think also it's this image of archetypal image of an FA representative, and I think that's why Roy Hodgson fitted the image of an England manager to the FA in the way that Harry Redknapp didn't. And I think if you go through appointments through the years, the FA have always made FA appointments. They appoint FA-style people. And I do think that seeps into the consciousness. And I think that is about class. I think it's about colour. I think it's about the way people act, the way they behave. And I just think Sol Campbell, I think, would have been perceived as someone who was difficult, someone who is slightly aloof, someone who is not particularly popular in the dressing room. Where the colour comes into it, I have no idea whatsoever, but I can understand why he would think that.
Okay, so I got to jump in. I'm going to mention a United player as well, but what you said there, right, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul Ince, obviously another great England player, didn't he also have a reputation as a guy who was a bit difficult, a bit of an egomaniac, a lot of people didn't necessarily like him that much?
But as a leader, he also...
And he was also black, by the way.
He was also perceived as being a leader. Now, Sol Campbell never particularly had that depth.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
He was all, if you speak to his former teammates, he was aloof. He was seen as being different. And the FA, England, every Premier League football club, every league club has always found difficult to deal with those kind of characters. And you can go through the list. Graeme Le Saux would be another one. Criticised for reading The Guardian. I think that is a very English football thing. And I think that seeps into the consciousness probably more than colour, in my opinion.
I was going to say that I think speaking to people who played with Campbell, there probably was a perception among players that he was very intelligent. He was very much a leader with his actions. He was a captain on the pitch when he played. He was kind of, you know, he put his head in the way. He was a shouter. He was a talker on the pitch. In the dressing room, he was quite detached. He was a little bit different. And English football doesn't like different. I think those factors will all. So when whichever manager was sitting down and thinking, right, who's going to be my captain, he will have thought, well, Sol Campbell does this, this, and this, but he's maybe a little bit quiet in the dressing room and all that, and I think that's a factor. But that's irrelevant, because all of the people that were captain of England had pros and cons. The issue is whether one of the cons, at whatever conscious
level...
Except
for Bobby Moore.
Was, no, but even he will have had cons. The issue is whether at some point, at what point, those cons intersect with his colour.
So as you probably know, Greg Dyke and the FA have set up a panel of wise experts to... help improve and raise standards in the English game. So the Times has done the same, calling a crack panel of experts, which includes Ollie Kay, Matt Hughes, Matt Dickinson, of course, Rory K. Smith, who I guess is the most exotic of the four. It doesn't include myself or James or Tony Barrett, but we want to try to contribute as well if we can. But basically, our panel they've been talking to players, coaches, administrators to highlight the problems facing the game and try to get some solutions that Greg Dyke is looking for. The neat thing about this is that while Greg Dyke is basically a politician and he has to please the FA and his counselors, people like the lovely Barry Bright, yes, that's really his name, and also the Premier League and the England manager, we don't. We're actually completely independent, and we can tell people what they don't want to hear as well. With that in mind, I want to hand over to you, Rory, because you talked about this. How did this come about, and can you give us, in a nutshell, some of your findings that maybe surprised you, and as well as the findings of Husey, who I thought had a great spread a couple of days ago?
He did, and Matt Dickinson will be writing about the influence of money on the game in Tuesday's newspaper, and then we will have a kind of panel discussion on Wednesday.
To which I'm not invited.
To which you are not invited, but if you want to submit any correspondence, that will be greatly welcome. So basically the idea was, as you say, that Greg Dyke has announced this commission. It is time, I think, that people in English football started thinking seriously about radical change, because something is not working in English football. That is abundantly clear. At some point in the process, it's not working.
Where's it not working?
Well, possibly everywhere.
Sam Allardyce mentioned this in the Football Footballer Show, and he said people want to change English football. They're not happy with it. But if you actually look at it, look at the Premier League, look at how good it is, this, that, and the other. Be careful what you wish for.
England qualifying for major competitions, reaching quarterfinals and all this stuff. Everybody watching the Premier League bred players going abroad and playing for Real Madrid, like Mr. Gareth Bale or Mr. David Beckham before him. All this stuff didn't happen before. In fact, in the 70s, I know that you weren't even born in that decade, Rory, but England weren't even qualifying for World Cups, right? So,
no, and Gab,
do we really need radical change?
Gab, to be honest, I'm aware of that.
I am playing devil's advocate here.
I'm aware of that, obviously, and we all know that it's not like England's sort of history at international level is some sort of litany of success. And I personally think that the two of the biggest things that have to change, one is the expectation level, the understanding of where we stand as a nation, and the other is fan culture and what fans want from the game. They're two issues that have to be addressed. But there's no question that if you look at the Premier League, it is getting older, it's getting more foreign. It's a great product, it's great to watch, no one debates that. I would say the quality's dropping, others might not. But the fact is that there are more and more English players who are either being lost to the game or not getting a chance at all. And that's something that has to be addressed. The pool of English players that the national team manager can select from is getting smaller and smaller. English football, in terms of a product, is getting better. The Englishness of it is what is being lost. And to those of you who are English, that's probably important to you. So as a newspaper that's based in London that cares about the game deeply, we thought we would launch our own investigation to examine the issues, not necessarily to say we have the solution, but to examine the issues and say, these are the problems, what could we do? Because what will happen with Greg Dyche's commission is what happens with all of these commissions. There's been four or five in the last 12 years of these reports, these looks into English football, and what happens every time is what is threatening to happen with this one, which is that the status quo gets its teeth into it. You get the England manager on the panel who then asks Dyche to delay his findings until after the World Cup, because it might disrupt the England squad before the World Cup. What the hell are the England squad going to do in the World Cup?
Has he really done this, Uncle Roy?
Yeah, that was our splash on Friday, that they don't want it until after the World Cup because it might disrupt the harmony within the squad.
That's appalling.
That is the problem when you introduce short-term thinking.
That's appalling. Sorry, do we know that Roy actually said this, and it's not just Greg Dyche making up an excuse and saying, like...
Well, the problem
it has
they
been
would
delayed
have
until after the World Cup.
It's if they come out of all these changes and England actually go and win the World Cup, because what are we going to change?
Back to reality.
So without wanting to sound like to be kind of cast as the hipster looking to Germany all the time, the Germans after Euro 2000 introduced their own radical change to get more players through. They made the World Cup final in 2002. If that was England, we would have stopped
there. I might suggest, because the Germans understood a very basic concept, which does my freaking head in, is that you don't judge the quality of a country's football movement by whether they make the quarterfinals or the semifinal or the final of the World Cup or not. It's completely idiotic and stupid to do that.
Some of the most interesting stuff, in fact, has got nothing to do with the elite, and I think you have to separate the elite from the general game, because there are issues like... I was with a mate on Friday night who said that he runs his kids' football team. They've not played since November because no one will fund 3G pitches. And that's a massive issue, that people aren't having chance to play football because councils and the government and what have you won't put money into install 3G pitches. And it's a country where it rains quite a lot.
Tony, on this point, you've spoken about... I remember you writing, I don't know if it was a blog or...
It was a blog, and it was brilliant.
Okay, thank you, Tony. About how, I think it was in Liverpool, like when you were a kid, there were like, I don't know, X million leagues with X teams in it, and now there's a lot fewer. So it's much less of a participation sport. Do you really think it's that big a deal? Because there's actually a lot of studies that show that from a social perspective, it's great to have a million football pitches and get everybody out there playing, and women and kids and old people and special needs people. In real life, if you really, really, really want to do this, you identify the 5,000 best athletes in every age group, and you go and you put them in a hothouse, and that is how, and you devote all your energy and resources to them, and that is how you do it.
I just think my big problem with this whole course of events is that it's created an emotional detachment between the people who play the game, the majority of the people who play the game, I mean, involved with the game, and the people at the top who are in charge of this commission. There is not a groundswell of opinion that demanded change in English football. There were not people saying, we need a better England team, we need to do better. Everyone would like it, but that is no different to every country in the world. What there was in this country was a feeling at the grassroots level, where footballers like Ross Barkley are produced, that they were being left behind, that they were not being given the best chance to make the best of kids, that they weren't being given the facilities that they need. And it has become an elitist issue. It's become about the World Cup. It's become about England. It's become about Roy Hodgson. It's become about, and that is the problem in itself. It always boils down to the England, how do England do issue. When the majority of people in this country want to be able to play football the weekend, they want their kids to be able to play on a pitch. They want to have changing facilities. And if you get that right, which we've never, ever done in this country, then surely the improvements go upwards.
James, you're somebody who actually does work with kids. There's 14-year-olds. What I'm curious in getting is, like, obviously your guys at Ipswich have already been pre-selected, and Ipswich has a very good youth academy. Let's say out of 20 kids, I'm assuming probably more than half will not actually become professional footballers. What do they expect to get out of playing football for Ipswich as opposed to playing football outside an academy setting? And what do you want them to get?
Well, they'll get better coaching, but the main thing you want them to do is to basically enjoy it. Just go back a little bit. I've got a 16-year-old son as well who likes his football as well. I think one of the biggest problems we have at the moment is that when I was a kid and I come home from school, you'd go out and you play football. If that was in your garden, in the street, in the park. Kids don't do that now.
Can you tell us where you lived so we can put it in context?
In Suffolk, right. A place called near Bury St Edmunds. Right. Okay, so I would go out and play football with friends after school until it got dark and you'd come in. Kids don't do that anymore. They come in and they press the on button on their PlayStation and they don't go out and play. That is a general, and I would imagine that's not only in England now, all over the world, that is happening now. As far as changes in the game now, 2 years ago, the FA, the Premier League, got together and they set up the EPPP, which is the Elite Performance Player Plan. And basically what they want to do is to get all the best kids and give them 10,000 hours coaching a year.
Thank you, Syed.
So we've gone through. It's basically copied the Belgium system, and Belgium have copied and produced all of these good players. The coaching now if Tony, I'm sure he goes to Melwood, I'm sure he's been to Finch Farm. The academy setups that those two clubs will have will be phenomenal. The coaching that they will get now in these academies is better than it's ever been by an absolute country mile. You won't see the product, you won't see the end product yet, but in 10 and 15 years' time, you will start to see a new conveyor belt of young English footballers coming through these academies. It just has to happen with the coach. Now, the big, big problem that we have now is that they've got it all set up now, is the big, big problem now is when they get to 20, 21, they cannot get into first team football. And that is the big hurdle that needs to be overcome.
Okay, you called it the bottleneck, Roy, and you wrote eloquently about this in the game today. My obvious question is, it's not just English people who face this at 18, 19, you can't get first team football. I look at it from the outside and say, you can drop down, you can go abroad. And a lot of people from other countries who are very successful at football actually do that on a regular basis. Why can't these people do it?
Yeah, I think there's two issues. And as I say, I don't think the point, we're not so hubristic as to say that we have the answers or that we know best. But the aim of the project was to kind of to bring these issues into the public forum. I think you're quite right that there are two issues there. One, in terms of dropping down, if you speak to a lot of managers in the lower leagues, as I did, and a lot of academy directors in the Premier League, the Category 1 clubs under EPPP, they'll tell you that the dropping down, the Championship's different. League 1, League 2, there's no point. It's not the same game. You're not learning the same skills in League 1 and League 2 that you need
League. If you're good enough to play in the Premier League one day, presumably you're good enough to play in the Championship at age 20, right?
That depends on the structures in place to get you out on loan there. That it depends on which club you join. You can't be sure of the right coach in every club.
Forget loan, just ask for a transfer.
Sorry, mate, can I just cut in? Okay, so we're given guidelines by the FA, and it's all done in six-week cycles, what to coach kids, etc., etc. And a big thing is playing through the thirds, playing out from the back. If you go and watch any academy teams now, it is virtually drummed into them. When the goalkeeper gets it, he has to throw the ball out and you have to play through midfield, which is great, and it's a good football education. And if you're going to go and play in the Premier League, that happens. But what happens is these kids then get to a level of 19-20, they then have to go down to League 2 football.
But they don't have to go down to League 2 football.
Or League 1.
You know what, this really gets my goal.
Well, where are they going to go then? Nothing, where are they going to go?
I'm sorry, if you're 19 years old and you're at Manchester United, if you're supposedly good enough to make a difference to the England team, which is what Greg Dyke obviously cares about, then I would imagine that you should be able to go to the Championship or you should be able to go to the continent.
Well, hang on.
Right?
Can I just address that issue, Gab? Because I think you're right on that, and I don't want you to get – you're obviously getting worked up. There is an issue in terms of English players refusing to look abroad. That it's very much it's a one-way conversation that we say, well, all these foreigners are coming here taking our jobs, not letting our players play. That naturally means there are opportunities to go and play elsewhere if you're prepared to. There is a cultural issue there that people in general, same with the managers, English managers can't get jobs, go and see if you can get a job abroad. Why not?
It's not also a financial issue in that young English players are played a lot more than young foreign players.
Yeah, that would be a fact.
So when foreign clubs look for a player on loan, and they think we're going to have to pay two-thirds as wages, they don't want to pay £6,000 a week for an unsigned 18-year-old right back from Grimsby.
But I'm not going to have too much sympathy for people who are sitting there and are stuck in this bottleneck and are crying and moaning to Rory K. Smith when these guys are making $10,000 a week and never playing. And they don't want to take even a temporary cut in wages to go somewhere. They don't believe in themselves enough to go down if that's what it takes.
I don't think money's the issue. I don't think.
So he's lying then when he says money's the issue. No. They're both lying. It's Barrett, Smith, liars.
Money's not the issue. There are certain young kids who have not kicked a football that are on ridiculous amounts of money. And the reason they are because they have to be poached from other clubs. So that's. But I don't think money is the total. It's opportunities. Mm. That is the big issue here. Now, the problem is coaching will only get you so far. You need to go and play match day games. You need to go and get to that pace of first team football. You need to go and play men's football. That's basically what you need to do. And if you look at the England team, vast majority of the England team now, if you go through the team, have actually come through the lower leagues, whether it be on loan or come through clubs. Very few now literally go straight. I think it's almost impossible for a player, for a 19-year-old to go straight into Man City's team or to go straight into Chelsea's team and be able to. You don't get chance to straight away think, well, you know, we'll give you an opportunity. If you make a mistake, don't worry about it.
But that's normal because those are two of the best teams in the world that you mentioned.
The problem with it is it's such a massive topic and there are so many different ways of looking at it. I think you've got to remember we're not talking about the Wayne Rooneys, the Theo Walcotts, the Luke Shaws, the players who will make it. You're going to get a handful of players.
You're talking about Mark Albrighton.
You're talking about, do you know who you're talking about? You're talking about John Flanagan, right? So the very least that academies can do, and I'm going to steal a thought from Barrett here, the very least academies should be able to do at every club is produce your backup right back. That is the least that an academy should be able to do. If you look at the figures of academy graduates who are actually in their club senior teams, that there's no, I think Everton and Liverpool are quite high, slightly artificially so, just they've named a lot of youngsters on their bench. West Ham are up there, Southampton are up there. Everyone else is 1, 2, 3. Crystal Palace, I think, have got either 0 or 1 homegrown players in their senior squad now who are England eligible. Right, that's Crystal Palace in the middle of South London.
Enough of that. Time for some quick hits. Please keep answers to 25 seconds or less. Andre Schürrle bangs in 3 goals after being on the shelf for most of the season as Chelsea roll to win at Craven Cottage. Rory, will we see more of him now?
Yes, a little bit, but I'm not sure whether he will ever command a regular place in Chelsea's first team.
Yeah, I'm not sure he was Mourinho's first pick, which is why they brought in William in the first place. Liverpool are sort of still in it too, eh? They go marauding at the St. Mary's and Suarez nets his own special hat-trick, scores one, sets up one, and wins a penalty. Tony, are you a believer? Give me percentages.
Percentages.
Liverpool to win the Premier League 2013-14. Go.
33%. I think Liverpool have got a 1 in 3 chance simply because they're out of Europe. They're out of all the cups. They've got nothing else to play for but the league.
Sir Alex Ferguson has piped up from LA, no less, to give David Moyes his vote of confidence after last week's Greek horror show. James, is Sir Alex keeping the right distance from the club? Because I wonder if he'd be better off further away and just never speaking or being out of the club altogether, or maybe a little more hands-on and actually working with Moyes, or has he got it just right?
No, I think he's got it just right. I don't think you can diminish a figure like Sir Alex Ferguson. He's a director at the end of the day. He's come out, he's very positive, he's backed David Moyes. I think David Moyes will be there next season. Manchester United will have a lot of money to spend in the summer. They will bring in some big names and they will come back next summer.
I can sense the positivity in your voice. Nicolas Anelka gets a 5-match ban for his canal gesture. Rory, we haven't seen the written reasons yet, and I think it's insane to go and give an opinion on this until we actually see them. But I'm going to ask you anyway. Do 5 games sound right to you?
I don't know, because I'm not quite sure what the logic is in kind of the tariff of games for a ban. Like what's right? So if it had been 6, would we all have been like, oh, that's fine, that's perfect? If it had been 8, what's the actual difference? It's just 3 extra games. It doesn't mean anything. So I don't know.
I might add, if it's supposed to be a deterrent, I don't think somebody goes out and thinks, ooh, well, if it'll cost me 6 games, I won't do it. But if it costs me 3 games, I will do it. Christian Benteke is back with a bang as he scores 2 and Villa come from behind to beat Norwich. Tony, Norwich's fixture list is horrid. Are they done with the Premier League?
No, simply because the way they performed against Spurs gives them a chance of beating anyone at home. I think their home form will be crucial. No, they could actually be doomed. I've changed my mind mid-through. Yeah, they could be the one that sinks.
All right, sorry, Delia. Alan Pardew has been fined $100,000 for appearing to headbutt David Myler, Newcastle's 4-1 win over Hull. Managers lose their cool. This guy has previous, at least on the touchline, usually picking on older men like Martin O'Neill, Arsene Wenger, and of course Manuel Pellegrini, who he so classily called an old c***. James, it's true. Am I, are you laughing? Am I lying? It's true. James, you ever seen anything like that? And do you wish that maybe Pardew would pick on somebody his own size?
I've seen it inside change rooms, but I haven't seen it on the touchline. I've never seen that before, no.
Inside changing room, well, like, but a
manager on your own
body.
Players, yeah, players and you know, managers squaring up and I wouldn't say headbutting, but there has been,
but not
physical,
in public,
yeah, no, not in public.
And that wasn't a proper headbutt, was it?
No,
exactly. Spurs squeeze out a win over Cardiff as Roberto Soldado is on the score sheet. Rory, he speaks Spanish and his name ends in a vowel, so you and I have to love him. But truth be told, are you a bit disappointed by the former Valencia man?
Not disappointed, because I'm not surprised that he struggled. He's a penalty box player, and the way that Spurs were set up for a long time this season wasn't right for him. I think he'll be disappointed with this season. I think it's cost him a place in the World Cup squad, and I think Spurs might cut their losses in the summer and sell him back to Spain.
There you go. FIFA's international board met, and the main significant thing they did at the behest of the lovable Alex Horn from the Football Association was to ban players from lifting their shirts to reveal undergarments with messages on them, like the one Billy Sharp dedicated to his infant son who had died 2 years earlier. Tony, don't they have better things to do?
No, exactly. It's a typical FIFA, UEFA, the FA. They always look for the things that don't matter and crack down upon them. If a player wants to lift his shirt and have a political slogan, good luck to you.
England play this week. James, you're my last hope, since Rory is a foreigner-loving football hipster and Tony isn't English, he's Scouse. What are you hoping for from England on Wednesday night? Please don't tell me I don't care about England. I only care about United.
I won't say that. I would like to see players given their opportunities. I'd like to not see a friendly which is littered with changes and people coming on and off. Which I didn't. I'd like to see Luke Shaw play.
Gab, one for you. There was a Madrid derby in La Liga this week, a fiery one. ¿Qué pasó?
I thought this was actually one of the best games I've seen this season. It finished 2-2, which is, Barcelona also won, but it's pretty huge for Madrid because they maintain their lead. Everything went swimmingly at first. They took the lead through Benzema. Then Atletico stormed back. Gabby shooting from about a billion yards out. There was a bunch of controversial incidents, many of them involving Diego Costa. There was tremendous intensity, I thought, in this game. People look at it and be like, oh, there's diving and rolling around. Yeah, but it was diving and rolling around, I thought, with a purpose. It's not something you want to see. But I thought, actually, the referee, in a really, really difficult game, and despite getting a couple things wrong, perhaps, I think he did a really good job at keeping the lid on it, keeping it entertaining. And I think Real Madrid just took one huge step closer to the title. That's all we've got time for this week. My thanks to James Scowcroft, Tony Barrett, and, of course, Rory K. Smith. Another reminder that you can see the show live on the 6th of March at the Playhouse Theatre in Liverpool. In fact, it's going to be even better than this show because James Scowcroft and will be replaced by Peter Reed. You don't disrespect, right? Reed, he's more of a legend than you are. And, of course, Rory Smith will be replaced by Tony Evans, who's obviously our boss, so he's far better than Rory Smith. Tony, it'll still be you and it'll still be me. So remember, tickets cost £5 for Times Plus members and £7.50 for non-members. To book, you can visit www.ctickets.com/thetimes or better yet, call 0871-620-4025. We're all on Twitter. We all love hearing from you. We all respond personally to every single tweet. James, is it Scowy 1975?
C-O-W-Y 1975.
There you go, Rory.
At Tony Evans Times.
There you go. And Tony?
At Tony Barrett Times.
There you go. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Hi, I'm Tim Montgomery, the presenter of another Times podcast from the opinion pages called Did You Read? It's the perfect weekly snapshot of some of the best writing in the newspaper. Find out more by heading to thetimes.co.uk/commentcentral and search Did You Read to subscribe on iTunes.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.